We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Election Night Coverage 2024.
On election night, the crew will be, Tim, you'll be here, Ed will be here, Wesley will be here, Walker will be here, and I'll be along for color commentary.
We're going to be offering some astute political analysis.
Yeah. It will be astute.
Huh? Yes.
If it's not astute,
why bother?
Why bother? That's our motto.
On election night, beginning at 6 Central, it's Election Night Coverage 2024 on American Family Radio. Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It is Tuesday, October 29th, and you know what that means. We are 1 week out from the 2024 election, and while so much focus, of course, has been on the presidential race, and rightly so, here in the state of Florida, and also in a lot of other states, by the way, there are citizens initiatives, there are ballot propositions that you really need to pay attention to, and here in the state of Florida especially, this is a test ground state for the left to see how much they can get away with pushing back against the pro-life movement, because Governor Ron DeSantis, in the overturning of Roe versus Wade with the Dobbs opinion, signed what the legislature sent through, which was a heartbeat bill in the state of Florida, and that has been Florida law. There is now so much misconception around that, misinformation, and the left, including Planned Parenthood, George Soros, is trying to push through one of the most radical and extreme constitutional amendments in the state of Florida. And Floridians need to vote no on this. And two very important people from the state of Florida are here to discuss why. So we have first Secretary Jason Wieda, who is for the Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining. And we also have Secretary Siobhan Harris from the Florida Department of Children and Families. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yeah, thank you so much to both of you for joining. This is such an important topic, and I know that the governor has been on this just absolutely barnstorming tour across the state of Florida to get the word out why voters need to oppose Amendment 4. And Secretary Wieda, I want to start with you. Speaking of the misinformation about Amendment 4 in Florida, I know that your agency has done a lot to simply explain to voters in the state of Florida what Florida law is and how this amendment would modify that. So what do you think is the most critical information that voters need to know that is combating this misinformation?
Yeah, so thanks again for having me. So I really encourage all Floridians, whenever you're considering a constitutional amendment, read the text of the amendment. And I think when you read the text of this particular amendment, Amendment 4, what you're going to see is that it's extremely open-ended and vague. They cast this as some kind of pro-freedom amendment, but in fact, it's exactly the opposite. They did it that way intentionally to deceive Florida's freedom-loving voters. But when you look at the text and you consider Florida law, I think you draw other conclusions. But the text of the amendment doesn't define viability. And really, what it would do is if this becomes part of the Florida Constitution, is that it would allow late-term abortions, abortions up to the moment of birth in Florida, based on a mother's quote-unquote health, which is not defined. It's not defined at all. And I find it very ironic that some of these terms are not defined, because the pro-abortion groups for years have been complaining about what they perceive to be open-ended pro-life laws around the state, and now they're doing the same thing that they complained about. The other issue is that it delegates the scope of this exception to quote-unquote healthcare providers, another term that is not defined at all. It could be literally anyone. And Florida law right now restricts abortions to a doctor, and there's obvious reasons for that, including the mother's health and safety, which Florida cares quite a bit about. Another thing I wanted to point out is that the amendment talks about notification. It's interesting that they use that word notification to parents. When a minor has an abortion in Florida right now, it requires parental consent. By using the word notification to a parent instead of consent of the parent, it essentially wipes out Florida's laws regarding parental consent, and we think that that is inappropriate. A couple other points I can mention quickly. It says, the text of the amendment, again, encourage everyone to read it, that it talks about that no law shall delay or restrict abortions. Now, it's interesting because that casts into doubt a host of protections for women currently in Florida law. There's all sorts of laws and regulations that protect women if they're thinking about or going through one of these procedures. For example, reading literature, getting an ultrasound, counseling, all sorts of things, basic sanitation requirements in abortion facilities, all types of things that would be cast into doubt, thrown in the hands of the courts if this were to pass, and with lasting and unknown impacts. So it's something that Floridians should really think carefully about. It would upend current law, and really there would be huge question marks surrounding what these terms even mean for years to come, all that would threaten women's health and safety in Florida.
And we're speaking about Amendment 4 in Florida. And for more information, and there's a great two-minute video that just explains how deceptive and extreme this abortion amendment is, you can go to VoteNoOn4Florida.com, VoteNoOn4Florida.com. And Secretary Harris, to Secretary Wieda's point, I mean, there has been so much education that all of you in Florida and in the DeSantis administration are trying to simply educate voters. And the stats are showing that when voters, even pro-choice voters, are actually informed about the removal of the parental consent requirement, I mean, that's a really big one. But then also these terms like viability and healthcare work provider and medical necessity, all of these things aren't defined, that even people who are generally pro-choice are voting no. So what is, a week out, how do you see the landscape, and what can listeners do to continue to encourage people who may even be on the other side of the fence to vote no on this?
Thanks, Jenna. You know, I think that there's nothing more powerful than an informed voter. And Amendment 4 is written intentionally vague to give you this false sense of assurance that all it does is restore the status quo before the passage of the Heartbeat Protection Act. The ad campaigns in support of the amendment have been intentionally misleading with the sole focus of inciting fear. And that's why we think it's so vitally important to ensure that good information is being shared with the public, because again, knowledge is power. And you raise an excellent point in terms of the parental notification piece. I'm a mom of two girls, and I just can't imagine, I think it's inconceivable that we would think it's okay to just notify a parent of such a major procedure. I mean, I wasn't able, my daughter wasn't able to open up a bank account without me or go to her dermatology appointment without me. And so how can we believe it's A-okay to just call and leave a voicemail? And I think that when voters really understand what this amendment does, I think their eyes are opened, right? There are a lot of protections that are currently in place under current law when it comes to the health and safety of mom, or if you become pregnant as a result of rape and incest. And I think that a lot of the ads just are misleading and not giving voters good information. So I think that it's all of our jobs to make sure that we're pushing out good information, factual information, so that when individuals go to the polls, they are making a good decision and an informed decision.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true across all of the 10 states that have abortion regulation amendments on their ballot, and AFA Action, you can go to afaaction.net, has a list of all of the states that have this, including my former home state of Colorado. And for everyone who's wondering, vote no on all of these. That's the recommendation from AFA Action. That is the pro-life and also just the conservative position in terms of making sure that we're not modifying and amending our law, that our highest state law of the land, without really important vetting and making sure that these are things that should properly go through the state legislature so that you can fine tune it later. And so I'm speaking with Secretary Jason Wieda from the Agency for Healthcare Administration in Florida and Secretary Siobhan Harris from the Department of Children and Families. And Secretary Wieda, there was a piece just yesterday in Florida Politics that the current polling shows that the abortion rights measure Amendment 4 is falling just short of passage in Florida, but will need undecided voters to break its way. So according to the St. Pete's polls conducted for Florida Politics, shows Amendment 4 failing that almost 54% of voters will support the measure and 38% of voters are against the initiative, but there's about 8% that are undecided. So this last week is going to be absolutely critical. How do you see this polling right now in terms of hopefully defeating Amendment 4?
Well, I think that Florida is different from some other states. Other states that have had this on the ballot, some of these measures have passed. Florida requires 60%, as you know. But one thing I would consider for all voters, and especially independent voters, to consider is, when you're thinking about this amendment, how do you feel about taxpayer-funded elective abortions? Because if you don't want your taxpayer dollars in Florida paying for elective abortions, you have to really think about how you're going to vote here, because that's what will happen. So in Michigan right now, after a similar ballot initiative passed, what the proponents of these amendments do is they sue the state and they say, hey, there's a constitutional right to abortion. You have to pay as a taxpayer, as a state, for elective abortions. That's their next move. So if this amendment were to pass, if you vote for it, you have to be on board with taxpayer-funded elective abortions, because that's what's going to happen next. They're going to try to get that. And so that's just one thought that people should have going into the polls next week.
And that's such an important point. And there is an impact statement that is on the ballot, which, of course, upset the leftists because they don't like the informed voters to talk about this type of impact. And so, Secretary Harris, you know, you mentioned being a mom and, you know, having a personal connection, of course, you know, as I think everyone who is involved in family life, in the Christian faith, I mean, everything, we all have a personal connection to this issue, because this is the most basic and fundamental right, which is the right to life and ensuring that we continue to protect that. And I don't think that this is a mistake or a coincidence that the most extreme measure on the ballot for 2024 is in the state of Florida, with one of the highest thresholds in the nation. And if this passes in Florida, it would seem like then the left would claim kind of a mandate to take this issue and try to pass it essentially across the country and foreclose any opportunity for conservatives and even just the voters to have a say later on in abortion regulation.
Absolutely. And, you know, Florida is a pro-family state. Our governor has probably been one of the most pro-family governors that our state has seen in terms of the policies that he supported and enacted. Millions of dollars are poured into our state every single year to support strong babies and ensuring moms and families thrive. And so I really think that it's unfortunate that this is the tactic that is being taken to debate and to enact legislation on such an important topic. I really believe that things of this nature really should be debated within the four walls of our Capitol. It's why you have elected officials. It's why you have them go and represent you in our legislature. And I think Florida has led the nation in so many ways, and we don't need to take a step back. on this important topic. We need to hold true to our values here as a state in protecting life. Again, I have many roles in this life, but the most important one is the role I play as mom. And I really think that it's important that we protect our kids. This amendment doesn't do that. And it certainly creates a really bad precedent and really strips our legislature's authority in clarifying any of the ambiguities that would ensue. And so I think it sets the stage for something that none of us want in terms of the direction of our state.
Yeah, that's so well said, Secretary Harris, because I think one of the biggest keys that is convincing people who might otherwise vote for this is that they're basically giving up their right to be represented in the state legislature later, and they're also deciding for future Floridians. I mean, I moved to the state 2 years ago, and if this had passed before I even moved to the state, it would have foreclosed my opportunity to be represented as a Floridian and even have a say in this at all. In the future. And that's a really big deal. And I think that people misunderstand sometimes what a constitutional amendment is versus what just legislation is. And so they think, oh, I'm for or against this issue. Well, we can go back and modify it later. But that's simply not the case. And so, Secretary Wieda, in just the last few minutes we have with both of you, and I so appreciate your time and the attention of the entire DeSantis administration on this important issue. Your agency has put out a lot of just correction statements that the left has said, you know, you're advocating one way or the other, you know, kind of thing on just some of this combating the misinformation. But it is so important for people to actually understand the current state of Florida's law. And so for the listeners who, of course, on my program are pro-life, largely, I mean, we get the haters, we welcome them too. But for people who may be trying to convince others that disagree with them, what do you think has been the most impactful that you've seen in terms of an argument to tell people, you know, listen, this isn't the way that we need to go about this debate?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would really just refer people to our website. I mean, we spend a lot of time focusing on transparency and a whole bunch of different issues in Florida. This issue is no other. Healthfinder.florida.gov. You can find it right on ACA's website. Really just goes through and just really by providing information about what this amendment actually means, because it was written deceptively, like we said, what it actually means, what the consequences of this are going to be. I think you can get as much information as you need to talk to whoever you want about it. For me, one of the big things, and I mentioned it earlier, is, you know, this is going to lead directly to taxpayer-funded elective abortions, and also would permit late-term abortions up to the moment of birth in Florida based on extremely undefined terms. So I think those are the two big things. All listed on our website, which I encourage people to visit.
Yeah, well said. And Secretary Harris, last question for you too. You know, as you're speaking with other women and moms across the state, and I know the First Lady has been engaged on this and also Amendment 3, what are you seeing as the most persuasive point as well to fellow moms?
Yeah, I think that particularly for moms, I mean, I know that it is hard to deny when you look at an ultrasound and you see a baby's feet kicking in the womb. I think the fact that this amendment does not define the term viability is a huge risk, right? You cannot tell me that a baby of gestational age of 30 weeks, 34 weeks is not a living, breathing person. And so I think the fact that we could end up with allowing late-term abortions until the moment of birth is just catastrophic. And I also think the parental notification versus consent issue is a real important one to all parents, really. It should be important to all parents, the thought that in our state, this would be the one procedure that you would not be able to consent to for your child.
Yeah, that to me is one of the most extreme parts of this that is just wild, that no parent should want to say, oh, I get a letter in the mail or a voicemail. I mean, this is just so extreme. Again, I appreciate both of you, Secretary Harris and Secretary Wieda, for joining me this morning. Go to VoteNoOn4Florida.com and make sure everyone get out this week. Vote your values. Vote for truth. Vote no on 4. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then, they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And our good friend Joel Rosenberg just tweeted this a couple of hours ago. High drama with just a week to go. And the headline from All Israel News is momentum shifting to Trump. The U.S. presidential race is too close to call, but experts say they detect a dynamic change away from Harris toward Trump. And the new poll shows Americans favor Trump when it comes to bringing peace to the Middle East. So Joel Rosenberg joins us now. So we got a week to go. So much going on. And where do you see the world stake standing?
Yeah, it's so interesting to chat with you now with just a week to go. It's really amazing. Good to talk to you, Jenny. Good to hear your voice. A couple of things to start with. First of all, I want to respond to this pretty shrill and hysterical attack that Kamala Harris and her allies are making that Donald Trump is a Nazi. Donald Trump is many things, and you and I have not always agreed with him. Obviously, people know that. But the man is not a Nazi. He's actually fighting the Nazis. He's fighting radical Islam. He destroyed ISIS. He confronted Iran, the Nazis that run Iran, more than any American president in history. He's been so pro-Israel, so pro-Jewish, so pro-Christian. None of that is Nazi-esque. And if there was any other doubt among mainstream liberals or, you know, progressives or whatever, very interesting new poll out here in Israel. We haven't even finished the story and posted it yet at All Israel News. But a new poll just out yesterday by one of the networks here in Israel shows that 66% of Israelis, 2 out of 3, support and want Donald Trump to be the next president of the United States. Only 17% support Kamala Harris. I mean, so for a Jewish state to overwhelmingly, you know, by 50 point difference, support Donald Trump. I think the Jews of Israel are pretty clear they would not be supporting a Nazi. So I think what we're watching is events in the Middle East. People in the Middle East are watching this American race more closely than any presidential election ever, because they know the differences in U.S. policy towards Israel, towards Iran, towards the Sunni Arab world are going to be so sharply and starkly different if Trump is the president versus Harris being the president. And I think that's very interesting. And I think Americans see it too. I mean, Americans are you know, she was at her high about a month ago, but then she started talking. Then Kamala Harris started doing interviews and town hall meetings. And Americans were like, whoa, I don't think she knows what she's doing. And her numbers have begun to drop. to the point where there's been a significant shift back to Trump. Now, I'm not saying he's going to win. It's too close to call that, but he's doing so much better than he was at this point in 16 that it's looking pretty good for Trump, but boy, every vote counts.
Yeah, and it's shocking, Joel, that, you know, Americans prefer McDonald's over word salad. I mean, that's, you know, that's shouldn't be surprising to us, right? But you also have a piece up on All Israel News that I'm just scanning now, and the headline is, how will Israeli Americans and American Christians vote? And to your point that every vote matters, every vote counts. This article cites the Barna Group's research that that I've been referencing as well, which is apathy among Christian voters, and an estimated 34 million churchgoers. I mean, these are engaged Christians, at least to the extent that they are self-identified as churchgoers, may sit out this election. What does that tell you about the state of Christianity in America?
Well, obviously, there's a huge struggle right now inside American Christianity. And I think that you're watching some apostasy begin to emerge. You know, people calling themselves Christians, but not really serious about the faith. That's what's affecting some. And so they're not seeing the importance of taking a vote next Tuesday, or, you know, hopefully sooner. Get your vote in now. Go in early, right? So that you're not in some long line on Tuesday. But the point is, are you going to take a stand against radical abortion on demand all the way through 9 months? Are you going to take a stand against transgender mutilation surgeries, castration?
And we may have lost Joel here. I'll wait for Devin to let me know that he's back. Yeah, I think we did lose him. But yeah, I mean, to Joel's point that he was just describing me, he could not have said that more perfectly, that, you know, this isn't just about Trump versus Harris and what personality you prefer, what, you know, tweets you prefer, and what town halls you prefer. I mean, these are major, major worldview issues that get to the very core of what truth is all about, and whether or not we all agree to still live in reality post November 5th. And for the Christian to sit out the election and just say, well, I don't want to engage this because politics is too dirty, or because, I mean, for whatever reason, or, you know, I don't know that my vote will count, or I'm still, you know, upset about the last election, or, you know, any of these reasons. This is simply abdicating your vote to the people who will engage. And Joel, so you're back now, I am told. And so I was just saying, you know, this gets to the heart of the worldview differences in all of these issues. It's not just about Trump versus Harris. I mean, voting our values as Christians means that we still want to live in a society that reflects truth and is willing to engage in reality after November.
That's right. Absolutely. And so, yeah, so, sorry we got the line got dropped, but basically the point I'm making is that there's a couple of different categories of Christians. One is the category of people who are apathetic or even apostatized, where they're not taking the Bible seriously. They're not taking biblical values seriously. So it's hard to expect them to vote biblical values if they don't actually have them, even though they're saying they're Christians. That's one category of Christians these days, so-called Christians. Another category, though, is those who absolutely hold strong biblical convictions in terms of life, of marriage, of, you know, God creating a man and God creating a woman and so forth. God standing with Israel and loving Israel, even though he loves the neighbors also, right? But then there's the Christian that may have those biblical convictions, but they don't have a conviction about being a good steward with the freedoms that they've been given. They somehow say, well, you know, there's no voting in the Bible. There's no democracy in the Bible. Well, that's true. But there was slavery in the Bible, but Paul said, if you have a chance to get out of slavery, get out. Right. And so we're not slaves in America. We're free people, and we have a stewardship of the freedom that God has given us, and to take a stand for those values. And I think this is a big fight right now over What is a Christian going to think when they walk into that that ballot booth? Are they going to be thinking, you know what, Trump bothers me because of his tweets, because of this, because of that? Yeah, sure, he's good on life, he's good at marriage, he's good on not letting boys walk into girls' locker rooms or take over their swim meets or whatever. Trump is strong on Israel, but I'm still bothered by him. Look, I get that. You get that. But there are some bigger issues. Kamala Harris is telling Christians to leave her rallies, right? Doesn't that tell us something? Trump is embracing Christians. Kamala Harris is not. And Kamala Harris is against almost every biblical value that I can think of. And she's also not competent. She's been the one presiding over the invasion of the southern border by illegal aliens. She's the one that's working closely with Biden at the time to allow the Taliban to take over Afghanistan, the most humiliating moment in the United States that I can ever remember. So I think this is the moment for Christians to say, listen, I'm not voting for perfection. I'm voting for progress. I'm voting, and what's progress? Is it the progressive definition, which means against the Bible, against everything that the Bible teaches us? Or is it moving towards those values, protecting our freedoms, protecting our liberties and our way of life that God gave us? And I think it's going to come down to, Jenna, whether Christians turn out en masse or not. I think Christians hold the key to this election. And I don't mean just white born-again evangelicals. I'm talking about black born-again evangelicals. I'm talking about Latino born-again evangelicals. I'm talking about Asian born-again evangelicals. I think there's a real opportunity for Christians to stand up and vote our values. If we don't, anybody who doesn't vote their values and make sure their vote gets in before the end of Tuesday has no right to complain that the country's going to hell in a handbasket.
Yeah, and I'm speaking with Jill Rosenberg, who is the editor-in-chief of All Israel News. You can find that at allisrael.com, and make sure that you are reading the headlines there. And this is why, Joel, the importance of this Barna survey, I think, cannot be underscored too much in the last week heading into the election, because you're absolutely right that evangelicals and self-identified Christians, who then we assume if you are a self-identified Christian, then you care about what the Bible says. You care about truth. You care about voting the values that reflect the person of truth of God. And if you don't, and yet you're calling yourself a Christian, well, then that's a whole different conversation. But for these, approximately 34 million, or give or take a little bit, that is game changing. Absolutely. And we often tell people, vote your values, vote your interests for, yourselves and your families. But here in America as well, self-government and the right that we have to elect our leaders and participate in and direct our government should also be used, even if people don't care about themselves and they say, I'm so apathetic, I'm just going to sit at home, at least care about the impact that the difference between these two administrations would have on the nation of Israel and the conflict in the Middle East. I mean, there is a Christian duty as well to care about those things when we can't just simply abdicate our responsibility and role in this country when we are a nation of the people, by the people, for the people, and embrace that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to give an encouragement on two other points. For every Christian that's listening to you that already has voted, that's not enough. Now you've got to get every member of your family and every friend that you have, every contact on your Facebook list, on your Instagram post, and persuade them, encourage them, offer to drive them to the polls and get them to vote. It's not enough just that we vote. We have a stewardship. We have a responsibility to mobilize people who may not feel as passionately as we do, but still believe what we believe and will vote their values if someone gives them a little encouragement and even offers to babysit for them while they go to the polls, or to take them and their whole family to the polls. That's one thing. That's critical. And the second thing is to pray, to really gather together with family and friends and pray every morning, every afternoon, every evening. right? Daniel prayed three times a day facing Jerusalem. God doesn't tell us how many times a day to pray, but he says they pray without ceasing. It is a spiritual battle for the direction of the United States of America. I can see it even more clearly because I live in Israel, I think, than even people sometimes see it in the United States. Satan is trying to destroy the United States because it is the last best hope of freedom in this world. And if Satan can completely destroy it, there is no superpower in the world who's going to protect the freedoms and the liberties, the God-given freedoms and liberties that Americans have held dear for 250 years or so. No one's going to come to the rescue and restore those rights and those freedoms if we let them slip away. So it is absolutely critical that we pray without ceasing, but don't just pray. Be like Nehemiah. He told everybody in Israel, we've got to rebuild this wall and protect our, around Jerusalem and protect our country, our city, our capital. But you're gonna basically have a hammer in one hand and a sword in the other. And so, we got to work and we got to pray. We got to pray like it depends completely on prayer, and we got to work like it completely depends on our own efforts. It doesn't depend on our efforts. Well, we can't do nothing. We have to do more than we're doing right now. And if there was one week in American history to say, I got to step up, this is the week.
Yeah, so well said. And last question for you, Joel Rosenberg. Speaking of people engaging and ensuring that, we continue to perfect our union and have a good trajectory, there is the other election that is so important is the internal GOP Senate leadership. And how important do you think that election is to, regardless of whether it's Trump or Harris that's in the White House? If it's Trump, hopefully there's somebody that would work with him. If Harris, somebody that would oppose a lot of the radical things that would come from her administration. But to replace Mitch McConnell, this election is going to take place in mid-November within the Senate. How important is that to the Middle East conflict specifically?
It's important, and I don't want to dismiss it, not at all. It's very important, but it's not the topic right now. Jenna, I would add something I failed to mention a moment ago, which is the next part is you can't just vote for the presidency of the United States. It's not Trump versus Harris. Republicans, actually, conservatives have a chance to pick up the Senate, but we also could lose the House. So every person that's going to vote has to also vote their values, biblical values, for their House and Senate members, and to make sure that there's a strong, a stronger majority in the House, and we don't lose that. We don't have Speaker Pelosi suddenly, and that conservatives can retake the Senate, and then we can make a decision who's going to lead us in the Senate. Obviously, we need changes there, and it's going to be important. But first, we've got to stay focused on what we got to do this week, and that is vote for the presidency and for the House and the Senate. And we cannot let our guard down. We've got to get every single Christian to the polls to vote biblical values.
Vote your values. Vote, vote, vote. Well, Joel Rosenberg, always so appreciate your insights and your commentary. Thank you for your prayers for this nation, for the work that you do. And again, follow Joel Rosenberg at Joel C. Rosenberg on X, and go to allisrael.com to read the top trending headlines from, of course, a biblical worldview, and also is just great, excellent reporting on the conflict in the Middle East. So please, as Joel said, be praying for this nation, be voting your values, and also encouraging others to get out and vote. We will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And speaking of voting your values and making sure that we live in the truth of reality moving forward after November 5th, there are so many issues that it are not just a Democrat versus Republican issue, but a worldview difference between the left and the right. And the Utah State volleyball team has really experienced this front and center. They announced on October 2nd that they would not participate in a match against San Jose State scheduled for October 23rd, sparking a nationwide debate. And while no specific reason was given by the university as to why the game was canceled, it was presumed to be due to the Spartans having the transgender athlete who goes by the name Blair Fleming on their roster. Of course, Riley Gaines has been an open spokesperson against men in women's sports. There's a lot of ongoing litigation. And our next guest is also an open advocate against men in women's sports and is the Utah State volleyball co-captain. Her name is Kylie Ray. And welcome, Kylie, to the program. So, so what specifically has been your experience in volleyball and why you are very passionate about living in reality that men just shouldn't compete in women's sports? I mean, that should not be a controversial topic.
I couldn't agree more. It seems like this is a topic that should fully be common sense, and for some reason, it's not. I had a unique opportunity just a few years ago. There was a celebration of the 50th anniversary of Title IX at my school, and they had a celebration for women in sport. And I got to shake hands with a lot of the women that were athletes when Utah State had just, when Title IX had been passed. I got to hear their stories of their sacrifice and how hard they worked to get Title IX passed. And that was such a moving experience to me to realize everything that I'm blessed with and maybe the things that I had taken for advantage in sport and or taken for granted. And seeing now today Title IX being attacked, I just feel such a strong responsibility. I mean, sports have given me my life and nothing short of it. It's the relationships that I've been blessed with, how I've been able to grow as a young woman, both in life and in my faith. And so I can't sit back and watch opportunities be taken away from other women, and especially for future generations, our daughters, our granddaughters. It's something that's absolutely unacceptable and something that I have to fight for. There's no choice.
And I commend you for standing up. That is a difficult and bold decision to stand for truth. And I know that every woman in your position, in your team's position, has to make that choice. And you've already sacrificed so much in terms of your training and everything that you've just mentioned. And yet standing on truth matters. And there's just so much even empirical data to say that if a man competes in women's sports, they're actually opening a huge potential risk for injury. And yet it seems like, the NCAA and all of these other sports organizations, the schools themselves, don't care about the physical safety of women. And I find that shocking as well.
Absolutely. Especially in volleyball. In sports like swimming and track, no one is necessarily put at risk. There's an obvious performance advantage, but there's not much risk that goes on. In a sport like volleyball, where you're exchanging a ball between other sides of the net, there brings in that level of risk, like you just mentioned, particularly with concussions. The rate of concussions goes up dramatically. I mean, the angle, the height that these transgender players are attacking at, it's just not comparable to the other women on the floor. And it can lead to some pretty dangerous situations. And we've seen that across the country already start to happen. And so it's like, at what point do we say women are truly being harmed? This is not okay. And the louder you stand for truth, Riley's taught me this, that the louder you stand for truth, the more people that are going to disagree with you. And I've learned so much through this process, but it has helped me to stand by my convictions and my beliefs that women's sports should be for women.
Yeah, women's sports should be for women. That is such a great point. And again, should be totally obvious. And so, Kaylee Ray, I so appreciate that you are willing to stand up for this. What conversations have you had with your fellow teammates? I mean, is this something that is widely shared, or is there some disagreement on, you know, that decision to pull out of that game? I mean, are there some of your teammates that are saying, you know, it doesn't really matter, I'd rather play the game and risk it, or I don't want to stand up for these issues, and I think it's fine that men compete in women's sports? What are some of those conversations with your fellow teammates?
Yeah, these conversations started a long time ago when we first found out that there was a transgender playing in San Jose. I would say my team is in such a unique position. We all come from such entirely different backgrounds, some even from international countries, some grow up in extremely, liberal households, some very conservative. So we all come from such different backgrounds, but this is the one issue that we all agree on. Some girls for sure feel more strongly than others, but everyone on some level recognizes that this is a problem, and us, taking that forfeit, as much as it shouldn't be a forfeit and we shouldn't have to sacrifice this because the people who should be protecting us have failed us, everyone on my team, actually, we are very united in our stance that we need to protect the integrity of women's sports and fairness in competition. It seems so basic, but yeah, that's where we all stand. And it's pretty powerful to be in that environment and that locker room where we all think the same and feel the same in this regard.
Yeah, it must be on some levels, discouraging to even have to have these conversations, because it should just be a reflection of reality. Do you think that you've gotten enough support from your school, or has there been more support from outside organizations and other people who are willing to stand by you?
Yeah, we have definitely received so much support from outside organizations. And I will say, even within the school, we've definitely received a lot of support, particularly those outside organizations. Obviously, Riley Gaines is the face of this movement, and she has been nothing short of incredible for us. It's really special to have a shout out from Riley and for her to send a message to the girls on our team that she is so proud of us for standing up for this. It just offers this level of encouragement and being able to stick strongly to your values. Obviously, for someone, honestly, as cool as Riley Gaines, it definitely helps us have the courage to keep standing up for what we believe in. We've definitely received some backlash from the other end, people unhappy with us. And so it can be really easy to get sucked into those negative voices. But Riley and other organizations like Icons, XXXY, that have been just so stellar for us and so grounding, and honestly, like a reminder of like, we're standing for truth. And if you stick by truth, you can never go wrong. So, yeah. There can be a lot of loud voices, but that's where we stand.
Absolutely. And you'll never regret standing for truth. But, if you end up not standing for truth, I think that's where sometimes regret comes. So we just have about a minute left, Kaylee. But how can listeners pray for you and your fellow teammates?
Yes, I would just ask prayers for us to continue to be courageous in the face of this, and prayers that the hearts of the leaders who are responsible for making these decisions, please pray that their hearts might be softened. This is obviously a very important issue. It affects more than just us on the volleyball team. And I just want to continue to have that message that like change is possible and we're going to make it happen.
Well, thank you for standing up. Continue to be courageous. We really appreciate you. And I know that the entire AFA family that is listening to that really respects you for your stand, and Riley Gaines as well. So thanks so much, Kaylee. And that's all the time we have. Make sure that you're getting out voting your values this week. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.